Hi, this is Sarah Wilson, the Associate Site Editor for the Storage Media Group. Today I'm here with John Twigo. John is the Managing Principal Partner for Twigo Partners International and a frequent contributor to TechTarget. Today he's here to discuss all things big data. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing, Sarah?
Good, thanks for being here. So to start, what do you think are some of the main challenges IT pros face when storing big data?
Well, first of all, I think we have to figure out what we mean by the expression big data. The first usage I heard of the term, and this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, referred to the combination of multiple databases, and in some cases, so-called unstructured data, into some sort of a framework for near real-time analysis. The point was we were going to gather all this data together, we were going to associate it with each other, and we were going to be able to allow the data, in many cases, to inform us of changes and give us information that was useful. Now, the classic case was finding a terrorist suspect based on what you know about the potential terrorist, okay, the documentation that he has from various countries, the airline booking databases that are out there for major airlines and the routes that he might take, vehicle rental information, if he's going to rent a vehicle and fill it up with explosives and blow something up, okay? All these things could be correlated. It was finding that proverbial needle in the haystack, okay? And that was what big data analysis was all about. And another use was spotting potential voter fraud by looking at death records and driver's licenses and white page directory listings and phone books and voter registration databases and combining all that stuff together and looking for folks who registered to vote who may already be deceased or whatever, you know, which is a common practice in Louisiana, I'm told. You know, the reason they bury people above ground in New Orleans is so it's easier to get them to the polling place on election day. The bottom line here is that these were the classic examples of what we are going to use this big data analytics technology for. And it expresses both what big data is and what big data analytics are, sort of in that definition. And the big data is simply the collection of stuff that is to be analyzed. Now, today, I'm hearing a lot of vendors using the term big data to refer to just about anything. It's a reference to the reality that we all confront, that we've got a lot of data and that it's growing, mostly in the form of files. And we have problems in curating that data and storing it and using it efficiently and cost-effectively. So basically, like most terms these days, big data seems to have been co-opted by marketeers, and now it means whatever the hell the marketing department says it means for the company that's articulating the value. So problem one is define what you mean by big data. And then we get into a whole different set of problems associated with figuring out a way to store a growing volume of data for a really long time versus finding a way to stand up many data sources that can be used collectively to achieve some analytical purpose. So if you understand what I'm saying, the challenge here is diffused by the fact that nobody has a good definition of what big data is.
So in the case of just really large volumes of data, what makes object storage so popular?
Okay, first of all, object storage, I think, is the future of storage, and I don't know anybody who would disagree with that. There are a lot of vendors who are kind of ahead of the curve, and they're evangelizing it as though it's something radically different and new, but object storage is like the next evolution of how we're going to store data. It's the only way to wrangle files, which now constitute more than half of the data that we're storing, and they're mostly controlled by users, so we don't have a lot of information about what's going on inside that file. It's sort of an anonymous piece of data. If we want to wrangle files and create some sort of organized methodology for storing them for a period of time, maybe migrate them through a tiering process, and pay attention to what their relevance is from a business standpoint, you're going to need a more granular way to do data management. And that's what object storage has offered to do for a very long time. Theoretically, certain types of big data analysis processes could also be facilitated by object storage, those that focus on metadata, counting operations, for example. Object storage removes some of the problems that are associated with unstructured data, depending on how you implement the object-oriented storage system itself, and could allow a mix and match of different kinds of files, plus quick reorganization for comparative purposes and so forth. A company called Coringo is one I've been following for about 5 years now. It has a great story to tell in this space, and they've been evangelizing object storage with zeal for quite some time. Now, the one caveat is that there are a lot of different products and different protocols for doing object storage that have started to appear in the market, partly because of the popularity and trendiness of things like big data. And like so many technologies, the industry seems absolutely hell-bent on creating exclusive stovepipe object storage methodologies that are going to create issues downstream for mixing and matching data that are organized using different object storage paradigms. I think that's going to hurt, for example, the use of clouds as object storage repositories, because you're going to have multiple clouds, and each cloud may be organized around a different object storage paradigm, and it won't be able to share its data with another cloud. That could be a big impediment going forward. But object storage basically is a way to put some additional value, think of it as an additional metadata construct, over the top of the file and give it a unique identifier so it doesn't get stepped on, and basically to include it into sort of a database structure so you're able to move it around and use it, reference it. If you think about the way the NSA is supposedly using telephone record data, and all these disclosures that have come out, they're not interested in the contents of the telephone conversation necessarily, but they are interested in the network of contacts, the relationships between data. That's something that object storage would be ideally suited to provide, would be a mechanism to be able to connect the dots and show metadata relationships between data as opposed to the content of the data itself. So in terms of the number of people who visit a website or the, it's not so important to me to know which people maybe visited that website, but the number of people who came there after a certain article was posted or whatever. These are places where simple counting operations may substitute for a detailed analysis of what's going on inside the file. And that's sort of the low-hanging fruit of big data analytics. So I see object storage definitely as the future. Will we get there in my lifetime? I don't know. It might just be like, how long have we been waiting on holographics?
So in addition to object storage, what other types of storage are best for big data storage?
Okay. Now, again, this comes down to what you want to do with your big data, and I put that in quotes. There are some practical issues, obviously, to consider. For example, you may need to have a method for reducing the amount of space that's occupied by big data to constrain storage capacity demand and the associated expense. And you need a way to do that that maybe doesn't impact your object storage method. So if you use object storage, your ability to derive information from what you need from the data expeditiously, that might be confused if you go and you take these object-oriented data entries that you've got and you compress them or you deduplicate them or something of that nature. That might spoil that data and make it unusable from an analytical perspective. So you got to be very circumspect about what you're going to do with the data, how you're going to store it, if you're going to reduce it, what the impact of that reduction will be. Another example is the problem of privacy, which enters into a lot of big data analytics processes. There may be a desire to share data sets, for example, treatment modalities inside healthcare. How many people have had this kind of cancer, and what was the efficacy of this particular drug treatment on that cancer? There are constraints in sharing the personal data that goes along with those health records. The HIPAA prevents you from being able to disclose private patient healthcare information, right? You can't have the patient's name and social security number and patient identification associated with the data itself. That's also a problem, with NSA. That's one of the big issues behind this NSA surveillance program. But it's a big issue for healthcare big data efforts in the future. So how do you minimize the alteration to data in order to redact sensitive stuff, but don't dilute or harm the data in such a way that would reduce its value from the standpoint of analytics? Contemporary encryption, which is a technology some people would like to use to protect privacy, to introduce privacy, is probably not going to work and play well with big data analytics. as we understand it today. Now, I chatted with IBM's Jeff Jonas, who's like a chief scientist who deals with their big data stuff, about this at IBM's Edge conference about a month ago. And he expressed a need for what he would call a variety of a one-way hash. And for those people who aren't familiar with what a one-way hash, it's a mechanism that preserves data usefulness and integrity with that, but excludes the sensitive details from the data. It's a hash, okay? So he said what we need to do is come up with, he described it this way, I thought it was great, I'm going to share it with you. You can give somebody some pork and a grinder, and they can use it to make sausage. But if you give them a sausage and a grinder, they can't reverse engineer it to make a pig, okay? And that would be the ideal way, that one-way hashing would be an ideal way to retain the value of data without any of the details that are better not shared. So I think about that, and I say there's still some room for some technology improvement here in order to determine how we're going to share the data, how we're going to store it is going to be affected that way. And finally, since continuity planning is sort of my shtick, I find myself asking if this data, this big data complex, this infrastructure that we're storing big data on, is so important and so mission critical, how are we going to protect it from loss or corruption when all the devices that it's stored on are subject to a broad range of problems, whether they be man-made threats or natural threats or whatever? I wouldn't deploy big data complex without figuring out first how to ensure its continuity, its availability, and its integrity. So in other words, I'm not going to give you a prescription on best options for storing data as much as I am trying to express that there are a number of considerations that you really better have in your head before you just start throwing data out there on storage.
Okay. Well, that wraps up the podcast. So thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Sarah.
For more information on big data, make sure to visit searchstorage.com.